It's a Christmas edition of Tuned to Yesterday, delivering radio programs from the holidays, from their golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Later in this hour, it's a broadcast of suspense from December 1959 called A Korean Christmas Carol. But first, a very famous broadcast of the Columbia Workshop, written, produced, and directed by radio's poet laureate Norman Corwin. It's called The Plot to Overthrow Christmas and debuted on CBS in this next episode on December 22, 1940.
You are aware of the plot to overthrow Christmas, which has been going on for some time now. In fact, Norman Corwin wrote a play called The Plot to Overthrow Christmas, which has been broadcast on CBS for 3 years. Tonight, you will hear it again. This presentation is by way of a Christmas gift from CBS to its listeners on the principle that the best presents you can give your friends are the things you want for yourself. We wish you good cheer and ask you to follow the unraveling of The Plot to Overthrow Christmas by Norman Corwin. Did you hear about the plot to overthrow Christmas? Well, gather ye now from Maine to the Isthmus of Panama and listen to the story of the utter inglory of some gory goings-on in hell. Now, it happened in Hades, ladies and gentlemen. It happened down there that the fiends held a meeting. The fiends held a meeting for the purpose of defeating Christmas. With the aid of a fade on the radio, we'll take you there with a high and a hady-ho to hear firsthand the brewing of the plot down in the deepest Stygian grot.
Grot is a poetical term for grotto. Whenever you hear my voce sotto, or sotto voce, whichever you prefer, it's just I taking pains to make quite sure that nobody makes a poetical allusion which might in any way create confusion. I return you now to the voice you were hearing before I had to do this interfering.
As I was saying, in this Stygian grot, the notables of Limbo hatched a plot. And what went on in the sulfurous hole we'll soon pick up by remote control. Of course, such a pickup is not made quickly. As a matter of fact, it's done rather trickly. You mustn't mind if it sounds erratic. That's merely intraterrestrial static. And don't be surprised if you're deafened by thunder just as we start on our journey under. You'll hear earthquakes and all of the commoner varieties of natural phenomena. And so, below, via radio, to the regions where legions of the damned go.
Me in the middle of a movement of my favorite concerto. You should look to the improvement of your manners.
Sir, if you please, my apologies. I would not have intruded upon your recital if the matter were not so terribly vital.
The most important matter in the world is piddling when it comes to be compared with Nero's fiddling.
Now, what you say may be very true, but I have been sent here to summon you to a great mass meeting of the tortured souls down in the grot of the flaming coal.
A meeting? What for? What's the big idea? Why can't a fellow have some peace down here?
Peace? Poor soul can't be found on the premises. This is a region abounding in nemesis.
Now you're talking like a travel folder. Tell me, varlet, before I smolder, why are we meeting? Who's on the spot?
We're meeting in order to fabricate a plot. A plot against a festival that mortal men comfort in and gladden in again and again. You see, every year...
Never mind the facts. I don't want to hear how mortal man acts. The only information about which I care concerns the mass meeting and who'll be there.
His wickedness, Mephisto, will preside.
Naturally.
And several of the Borgias will be sitting at his side. And down in front, by the sizzling sodium, will be many personalities noted for their odium. Haman, Caligula, Medusa, and Legree.
That's all very nice, but what about me?
Oh, you'll be sitting in row A, center, between Ivan the Terrible, the Tormentor, and Circe.
Mercy! Why, they're both deranged!
Do you wish me to see if your seat can be changed?
Yes, if you will, please. Taste comes first, even though a soul may be eternally cursed.
Righto. See you at the meeting, then.
Yes. And now back to my fiddling again.
This is I, the sotto voce person. It should have been explained that Nero's rehearsing for nothing in particular. He's just that way. While hell's fires burn, he likes to play. Makes it feel a little more at home. It's just an avocation he picked up in Rome.
I've called you here from over 60 seas of boiling pitch and blazing phosphorus to stop what constitutes a loss for us. We've lost prestige, and I greatly deplore that we stand in danger of losing more in the way of confidence and spirit. We're far from our goal. We're nowhere near it. And this is the reason. Though we've done well in carrying forward the work of hell, we've left a very big job unfinished. After all these years, there is undiminished goodwill on earth every late December because of Christmas. Now, please remember that as long as this continues to be, the race of man will not belong to me. I will listen now to any questions you may want to ask, and then suggestions.
Mr. Chairman.
Brother Haman has the floor.
You say we have done well in our effort to sell evil. I say we have done better. We have carried out the letter of your law. We've done what I think is a pretty good job. And I say, as a veteran demon...
Sit down there, Haman. Enough of this folly.
Sit down yourself. You're off your trolley.
Sit down, for I am Ivan the Terrible.
You're telling us. Why, you are unbearable.
Hello, demons. This is no way to act. Please proceed with a little more tact. I want more decorum in this forum. All personal remarks must cease. Now, Brother Ivan, will you speak your piece?
I merely want to say in a casual way that Haman is a radical. He always gets fanatical. Why anybody think to hear him snort that the work of the Nazis should just stop short? Anybody think to hear him talking that Hitler and Hito should stop stalking the ways of the world?
Mr. Chairman, Brother Ivan is a demagogue with a brain like a fly and the manners of a hog. Why, he says we...
Now that's enough. We will hear from others. Surely there must be among you brothers enough venom and malevolence to crush a mortal man's benevolence. It's come to this. Are we going to let a little holiday like Christmas get the better of us all down here below?
No.
Very well then, sirs. Very well. Let's go. Let's lay down our plans now to overthrow this Christmas business and all that guff of holly and mistletoe and stuff.
Mr. Chairman!
Brother Caligula may take the floor.
Mr. Chairman, I abhor, as a former emperor, anything which curbs our rule. I suggest we start right in manufacturing more sin. Let us give some presents, too. Candy sticks and things to chew. Fruits and nuts and little cakes. Poisonous as rattlesnakes.
Bravo!
Let our subtlest worker be... bichloride of mercury. Let us wrap in tinsel bright little gifts of dynamite. Work things so that men will fear when 12:25 draws near.
Bravo!
Soon at this rate, if you please, men will hang from Christmas trees.
My dear Caligula, permit the chair to say that we think you've got something there. And now, with this fine start, let's hear some more. Yes, Brother Nero, do you want the floor?
With all due respect to Caligula's views, I think there's a better method we can use. I've just heard lately men are giving the razz to classical music by making it jazz. They're swinging it Bach, and what is keener? They're doing the shag to Palestrina.
Yeah, yeah.
As a connoisseur of music, of course I love the works of Rimsky-Korsakov. But today I note with a bitter shrug, they've made Scheherazade a jitterbug.
Much as we admire your clever rhyme, will you get to the point? We're wasting time.
I was just about to say, when interrupted, that Christmas can easily be corrupted. If you take and swing all the Christmas carols, why, think of the evil. Just barrels and barrels of sacrilege every time you play a pious song in a profane way. Why, once you entice them to swing Noel, then victory belongs to us fiends. Well,
Mr. Hammer!
Mr. Legree.
I'd like to say that it seems to me that you all's barking up a coonless tree. I think Mr. Nero's made a wrong guess. The way to go about it is to get in Congress and bribe a bunch of senators who know their oaths and just make a purchase of a block of votes. And then they can legislate a situation where they rule old Christmas right out of the nation. They can all get together and pass a law where there ain't gonna be no Christmas anymore.
I think Legree's suggestion is a beaut.
That's very cute.
And quite astute.
To me, it seems a bit impractical, because you have to be so tactical.
Why?
For instance, now, a senator who'd sell his vote to our lobbyists might very well sell right out again and become a tool of agencies representing the Yule.
By the eternal night, that's right.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Miss Borgia.
I say that we should all give pause to think about this Santa Claus. He is the man behind the scenes, the symbol of what Christmas means. If we could rub him out, my friend, our troubles would be at an end. Just think how it would tickle us to liquidate St. Nicholas. A girl like me could fascinate the guy and then assassinate.
Do you think that you could do it, pretty one? Are you sure you wouldn't be by pity one?
Sometimes you are an awful tease, my master Mephistopheles. Ain't I murdered several dozens? Poisoned uncles, aunts, and cousins? Don't my work right here in Hades make me first among the ladies? Men of virtue all have cussed me. I am sure that you can trust me.
Of that we haven't a particle of a doubt, Miss Borgia. And I'm sure we all have nothing but kind feelings toward you. But many times a woman's spy, alas, adores her victims. Dames make poor ambassadors.
Do you imply that such defects are found inherent in my sex?
I do.
Well, listen here, old Ironsides. You're heading for some cyanides. You crossed a Borgia, and you know the consequences that follow.
Come, come, disciple. This is very bad. There's nothing to be gained by getting mad. Suppose we put the matter to a vote. First, the plan of Brother Nero's, viz., to swing the hymns and pious music. All those for will please respond by raising up a paw.
For?
And those against?
Against!
Very well. Now, the project of Legree's. Who is there here who totally agrees?
I do.
Legree votes for himself. And those opposed?
Opposed!
And now,
all those who favor Borgia's cause, it being to eliminate Santa Claus.
Aye, aye, aye!
And those opposed? Seems the women have a way with them. At least they've carried the day with them. The motion's carried. And now we'll decide which one of us will take Nick for a ride. We'll all draw lots and thus settle the moot point of who will be sent to execute.
Well, I...
This is your old friend, Sotto Voce, visiting down where it's eternal noche. Noche is Spanish for night, you know. Merely a reference, just to show that English isn't all I have to go by. Oh, well, I guess I've missed my calling. I should have been a lobbyist. You see, I'm stalling to give them time to finish the voting. Let's see. The weather. Now I'm quoting the Daily Hellion. Continued heat both overhead and under feet. Fresh and moderate gases blowing up to gale force and then going north by westerly. Light showers of brimstone toward the evening hours. That's what it says here. I'm not fibbing. How am I doing with my ad-libbing? This is a thing a gabbard have fun with. Say, the drawing should soon be done with. We expect the results at any moment now. As soon as...
The lots have been drawn, and I'm glad to say the honor has fallen Nero's way. You are charged with a great task. It's the evilest deed that we could ask a fiend to do. We'll be proud of you.
Ah, just one moment. How do I get there? What do I wear? Is it dry or wet there? Is it fact or fancy or just word of mouth that he lives at the pole? Is it north or south? If he dwells in the regions to which I've referred, must I pass through a camp of Admiral Byrd? What shall I use when it comes to the showdown? A gun or a dagger? Well, give me the lowdown.
Now, Nero, you needn't sound so tragic. You'll get to Earth by the blackest magic. To create an express elevator is simple for an expert spell creator. With a lot of pyrotechnic dazzle, we'll let you off on a hill in Basel, Switzerland. From there, you will make your way to the Arctic Circle, then break your way through ice with a blowtorch. After a while, you are bound to reach Santa's domicile. And once you get there, oh, my dear Nero, all of our work will have gone for zero. If you don't succeed in your assignment, a disadvantage of our confinement. In limbo is the fact that we only get one chance in all the eternal roulette of circumstance.
I know. If at first we don't succeed, we can try again. But there is no need, because nothing will come of it. Meaning no offense, do you mind if I take my departure hence?
That, my friends, was a big brass gong. It's used in this story right along to indicate that we're about to travel to points where the plot will further unravel. And now, if Ambassador Nero elects, we'll have another spot of sound effects.
Tell me, stranger. Basel, Switzerland, or is it already Donner and Blitzerland?
Donner und Blitzenlands, 5,000 miles away.
Thank you, mister. Good day. Tell me, stranger, I've been walking inland for weeks. Where am I now?
In Finland.
Tell me, stranger, because I've lost stock, where am I now?
In Vladivostok.
This is stranger after all these centuries of blistering heat. Now I have to suffer from freezing feet. I'm wincing with pain from this pesky toe.
No speak English. Eskimo.
I declare by my frenetic soul, I must be over the magnetic pole. My watch has stopped. Can that be right? I wonder... Ah, a light! A light! In a moment now, you'll hear me knock on Santa's door, and he'll unlock it nevermore to lock again.
Coming!
So is doom.
How do you do, sir?
Very well indeed. And you, sir?
Splendidly. Won't you come right in? Take your coat off. I see your chin is frozen. Also, your hands and knees. Sit down while I get you some antifreeze.
Don't bother, sir. I will not be long. I am about to perpetrate a fearful wrong. In short, I am going to do away with...
Take it easy. Do not play with that gun. I know all about you.
Really?
Haven't I had my agent scout you for weeks? You've come all this way to abolish Christmas. Now, let me say...
Listen, Santa. I'm no callow stripling. I've read Ernest Hemingway and Kipling and also The Shooting of Dan McGrew. And plenty of detective stories, too. And just to show you what a broad guy I am, I've also read The Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. Do you think that a fellow with his reading so graded could have learned so little as to be dissuaded from a main objective? Why, don't make me giggle.
I'd feel a lot better if you wouldn't wiggle that gun so. Much as I'm impressed with your education, I honestly believe that a figure of your station should have given more thought to the ways of man and less devotion to the cult of Pan.
By others, no doubt your wisdom may be prized, but I didn't come here to be criticized. In fact, I came to dispatch a duty, so don't hand me any of this tutti-frutti. If you have any last words you want to say, then spill them. I haven't got all day.
Now, what's the rush? Unless I've counted wrong, the polar day has always been 6 months long.
Well, after I've disposed of you, I've got to hurry. Right back to hell, they'll begin to worry.
Not about you, but about your career in homicide. Do you think that the mere loss of you would make them hysterical? Their only interest is numerical.
Think so?
Mephisto wants to rule just as much of humanity as possible for reasons of personal vanity.
By the Styx, you're right. To think that he'd dare. Are there any ladies here? Will you permit me to swear?
My answer to that is an emphatic no. There are several lady dolls in the toy room below.
Oh, Claudius. Oh, Cassius. Oh, Naphthalene, what a fool I've been. What a fool I've been. Yeah, but wait. I think I see what you're after. You're as clever as a big-time Roman grafter. You remind me now of my royalty, just to get me in the mood for disloyalty. Do you think I could be that meanly deceptive to Satan? Why, Santa, I'm keenly perceptive. I can see right through all your clever ruses. Nero can be plenty foxy when he chooses. I'll have you know that I'm partly a dreamer, partly a wit, and partly a schemer. I'm part philosophical and also part mystic.
I suppose you fancy that you're highly artistic.
Fancy? Why, I have such a sense of beauty.
Don't hand me a helping of tutti frutti. Any creature who really had beauty in his soul would appreciate Christmas. He would know that the whole idea of the holiday was one of such power that all the fiends below might gnash their fangs and glower, yet never in a million years could do it harm. Because it has a glory, a greatness, a charm you'd know nothing about.
That's so?
The spirit that it venerates, the good cheer that it generates, are things far, far beyond you. For all your wealth, no man on earth could sell ye these.
Am I so cursed as that? Will you tell me, please? What beauties there may be that I've never seen.
Have you ever seen a Christmas tree, tall and green, smelling of woodlands, covered with a sheen of silveriness, its branches bending low, with the fruits of human kindness instead of snow?
No.
Have you ever closely witnessed what takes place any Christmas morning on a young child's face? Or perceived any beauties purer than the joys distilled in the hearts of little girls and boys? Have you ever watched a fire in a fireplace on a Christmas Eve? Or listened to a grace at a table heavy with fruits and cakes and all the wonders that a kitchen makes? Fowls and pastries, wines and meats, and nuts and raisins and candied sweets? Have you ever seen mistletoe hanging from a ceiling? In frosty air, heard a far bell pealing? Have you ever come back from a sleigh ride tingling and your feet keeping time with the sleigh bells jingling? Have you ever seen the beauty of a sprig of holly? Or felt for a moment how it feels to be jolly?
Golly!
Have you ever known how exceedingly pleasant it is to unwrap a Christmas present? Did you ever know how much cheer it lends to be wished a Merry Christmas by all your friends? Did you ever experience the fun of giving? Do you know at all the joys of living?
I guess I don't. For all of me, I never knew such things could be. Just think how long in ignorance I've slept.
It must have been the company you kept.
I was a wicked tyrant once, you know.
Oh, yes, but that was centuries ago. You really had no way of knowing.
Perhaps. I guess that I'll be going. I really should be getting on my way.
But do you have to? Don't you want to stay?
You see, I'm just a bit,
Embarrassed?
Why, yes, sir.
Now, don't look so harassed. I know just why you came and who it was that sent you. But that's all done with. I take it you repent you of all your past mistakes?
With many pains and aches of conscience.
We interrupt this broadcast for a special bulletin. The Algiers radio, recorded by the CBS shortwave listening station, has just reported that Admiral Jean Darlan has been assassinated. Said the Algiers announcer, complete order reigns in Algiers. Further details at 8:55 tonight. We return you now to the program, The Plot to Overthrow Christmas.
And tell me, will you have some wine or beer? I never touch the stuff myself, but I managed to keep on hand a little rye for purposes medicinal. I mean, your chin should be unfrozen. What a state it's in.
A while ago, you asked me if I understood good cheer. I do so now, St. Nicholas. I see it standing here. I want to ask you something, sir. Now, please don't give a yelp. Is there any sort of work to do where I can be of help?
Indeed there is. Indeed there is. And I'm glad you asked me. I have so many toys to make. This year the job's got past me. But first you sit and eat this bowl. I've got a little trifle I'd like for you to see. So will you sit right here and stifle your curiosity? I'll get it for you right away. It's down the hall, please.
Who'd ever think it? Will wonders never cease? At last, after all these centuries, I'm so happy I could buzz. It shows you what a lot a little Christmas spirit does. As emperor, I envied oft the cheerfulness of peasants, and now I...
Well, here it is, Nero, my boy. By way of Christmas presents, I offer you this little gift.
But, Santa, for what reason?
A very good one, sir. To wit, compliments of the season. Well, go ahead and open it. Why stand there so, reflecting?
I'm just collecting thoughts, St. Nick. My thoughts, I'm just collecting. Just think how far a tiny bit of fellowship will carry us. Oh, well. I say, what's this? What's this? It is a Stradivarius. Oh, thank you. Thanks a million times. I don't know what to say to you. I'll tell you what I'll do, St. Nick. I'll start right in and play for you. I'll play all night and day for you.
Fine, here's some music. I'm sure you'll play it well. It's a little piece entitled Noel, Noel.
This is I. Remember me, your sotto voce friend? I'll just come back to tell you that the story's at an end.
Once again, the plot to overthrow Christmas has been foiled. 1 year ago today, none of us knew whether on December 24th, 1942, we could do such a broadcast as the Norman Corwin holiday play you have just heard. However, we could and we did. And we rather think that the plot to overthrow Christmas will be thwarted again in 1943.
The Columbia Workshop on Tuned to Yesterday from December 22, 1940 on CBS. It was first heard on Christmas Day 1938 in a program called Words Without Music, and again on the Orson Welles show called This Is My Best in December 1944. This is an hour of Christmas shows on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for radio's outstanding theater of thrills with a play a bit different from their other programs. It's Suspense with the Story, A Korean Christmas Carol, heard on CBS Radio on December 20th, 1959.
Tale well calculated to keep you in
suspense. The time, Christmas, 1958. The place, Korea. The story, A Korean Christmas Carol, written for Suspense by George Bamber.
Sounds good, doesn't it? You hear kids singing, I mean. I can't understand the language, but I know what they mean. They sound so fresh and full of promise, almost as if they knew. But then I'm getting ahead of myself. The name's Connolly, PFC Larry Connolly. I'm a soldier in Korea. I was sent here just about a year ago, this time. That's where this strange story begins. Christmas, 1958. Christmas was for me that year miserable. I'd been stuck on guard the night before, and so I planned to stay in bed the next day and forget about Christmas. I hadn't counted on my first sergeant. Since I was the first man he came to in the barracks, it's only logical that I should be the man he picks to drive a truck all the way to Seoul and back. It was night by the time I got on the road, headed back from Seoul. It started to snow. Big flakes coming down soft at first, then so thick and fast I could hardly see. I was just over that first range of mountains. I was starting on the twisting, slippery way down when I saw him. The sight of him scared me, wide awake. He was standing bareheaded, the wind whipping the snow and his hair around his face. When he raised his thumb, I had the strangest feeling he'd been expecting me, almost as if it were unnecessary, as if he knew I'd stop. You want a lift? I'm going as far as Camp Santa Barbara.
Where's that?
What do you mean, where's that? Everybody knows where Camp Santa Barbara is. Don't stand there with the door open. Hop in.
All right.
Well, you picked a lousy place to hitchhike. I just didn't stop.
Oh, thanks.
What happened to your gloves? Your hands look half frozen.
Gloves? Well, I must have lost them.
Must have, don't you know?
Yes, sure. I must have left them laying on the counter of the PX back there.
Leave your hat back there, too?
No, I lost my hat in the dark. I fell.
I suppose that's why your uniform's muddy and your jacket's torn.
Oh, yes, that's right, of course. I was walking along the edge of the road and I slipped in the dark. And I slid halfway down the embankment before I could stop.
I see you managed to hang on to your bag.
Oh, yeah, I can't afford to lose that. It's important. I'm late as it is.
What outfit you from?
3rd Recon... 7th Division Infantry.
Infantry? There's no artillery up this way. The infantry stationed about 7 miles back. You're heading in the wrong direction.
Yeah, well, 3rd Recon is a special detachment. We're off in the hills, all by ourselves. It's just off this road.
I've heard of it before. My name's Connolly. Larry Connolly. What's yours?
Oh, thanks. Mine's Richard Dombrowski.
Good to know you, Dombrowski. Yeah. Say, look, if you can let go of that bag long enough, I'll let you wear my gloves till your hands warm up.
Oh, no, thanks. That's all right. I'll put them in my pockets. Say, is it okay if I set my bag on the floor?
Oh, sure, no sweat.
Mm-hmm.
Say, you don't have a cigarette, do you? I'm fresh out.
Well, I don't know. Wait a minute. Yeah, here's some. Let me light it for you, though. You watch the road. I saw a whole truckload of troops disappear over that curve up ahead. Killed all but two.
Yeah? When that happened?
1951.
Yep. You were here when the war was on.
I guess you could say that.
Tell me, Dombrowski, What were you doing Christmas Day? Bet they didn't send you all the way to Seoul with an empty truck on a wild goose chase. That's what I did today. What'd you do 7 years ago?
Well, you see those lights up ahead? That's the village of Chungju-ri. We marched through there the day before Christmas.
Were you scared?
Oh, I think everybody's scared.
Hey, look out. You'll burn yourself.
What's the matter?
Cigarette burned all the way down to your fingers.
Oh.
Isn't it burning you?
Well, that? No. I guess it burned itself out before it got to my skin. Anyway, you see that hill over there? Well, Christmas Day, 1951, my platoon was all dug in around that hill.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. We went out on a patrol from that hill. And that was one time I was plenty scared. As a matter of fact, it happened just 7 years ago tonight. It hadn't snowed that day, but there was snow on the ground. I can remember because the guys were joking that at least we had a white Christmas. And what a Christmas it was. As I said, it was quiet Christmas Day, 1951. We were sitting around in our holes waiting for the fun, which we knew would begin the next day.
They'd managed to get hot turkey up to us, so we were relatively comfortable and happy until Brownie, our squad leader, came back from a talk with the old man.
All right, I'll take the first five. The old man wants us to go out and have a look around.
Come on,
knock it off. Get rid of your dog tags and canteens. Anything that might rattle or make a noise. We won't be gone long, but we're moving light. Hey, Whitey, might as well leave your helmet here. We want to move quiet.
But, Sarge, it's too cold to go out without a hat.
Cut the comedy, Walker.
We moved out on schedule just as night was falling. And with the night came a cold. We moved rapidly along the valley for about an hour or so when Brownie stopped and raised his hand.
All right, you men, hold it up. Once we get on the other side of that ridge up ahead, we'll observe maximum security. No talking, no lights. Keep down and watch where you put your big clumsy feet.
Yeah.
These people just love tripwires with flares attached. Walker, you still got the walkie-talkie?
If I didn't, I wouldn't be here to tell you about it.
Still working?
It's warm, if that's what you mean. That's more than I can say for myself.
All right, keep it that way. We may need it if we run into trouble. Hey, while we're here, let's take one last check on your gear. Make sure your rifle bolts aren't frozen, weapons on safety, and all grenades are secure in the pins. Okay, everybody set? Let's move out.
And so we did move out. The young one felt light in my hands, like I'd never realized how light and easy it was to carry a rifle before. The going was easy. The rice paddies were frozen over and covered with snow, and we stepped carefully between the clumps of rice stubble left over from the last harvest, so the dry straw made no noise. We walked steadily, quietly, maybe 200 yards without a sound, regularly stepping up and over each low rice paddy wall as we came to it, each one bringing us just that much closer to the top. And then it happened. Somebody must have tripped a wire because suddenly the inky black was transformed into the merciless white of the operating table. Everything seemed stopped and slowed down, just like an old movie before the projector blows up. I could see the other guys, the hills, and the deadly winking fires of the guns. And then we fell down to the protection of the earth. And some of us fell with metal in our bodies.
Crawl, you apes! Crawl to the mud bike and stay low. They can't hit us there.
And we crawled, digging our knees and fingers into the frozen mud until they were bruised and torn. We crawled closer to the ground and faster than we ever had before. We crawled to the sanctuary of a foot-high mud hill.
Keep your heads down. They got us pinned. One's about 150 yards to our front.
Where's the other?
Yeah, there's 200 yards to the left.
They got us pinned in a crossfire. We'll never get out of here.
All right. Now, don't panic. Keep your head down. We'll make it out. Walker, see if you can raise Lady Wolf on the walkie-talkie. Walker?
Walker's laying out there in the middle of the paddy, Brownie.
Huh?
He's never going to have to worry about being warm again.
Smith's out there, too. I saw him get it. I saw it when the flare went up.
I saw him catch it in the frame.
Okay, Harry, easy. You still got the walkie-talkie. Can you see if it's all right?
He's laying on it. It's hard to tell.
Whitey, that flare is going to go out mighty quick. If a man was fast, he could probably streak out there and back before they put up another one. We can use that walkie-talkie to call up some artillery to get these monkeys off our back.
I can't, Brownie. I must have been hit. I can't move my legs anymore. I can't even feel them.
Easy. Are you bleeding bad?
No.
Harry, you all right?
As far as I know.
Stevens?
Sure. I'd like to take a whirl at that walkie-talkie.
Wait till that flare burns out.
It's dying now.
Just a few more seconds. Go!
By the time the flare lit the sky, Stevens was halfway back, the walkie-talkie dangling from his right hand. So close, but in midair, some huge, invisible hand slapped him to the ground.
I'm hit. Oh, God, I'm hit.
Easy, boy, quiet. Where'd they get you?
I'm hit.
Look him over, Harry.
They busted his arm.
See any other places?
No, just his arm.
Wrap a dressing around it and butt it inside his jacket. Hand me that walkie-talkie.
It's no good, Brownie. The walkie-talkie smashed.
What?
It's useless.
We're going to have to move out of here fast.
Well, how are we going to pull out? We can't crawl back down the paddy. They'll slaughter us.
All right, look. We'll move along the dike to the edge of the rice paddy. From there, we can duck into the underbrush and move back down the mountain.
We'll never make it. They'll spot us when we try to make across the clearing to the underbrush. They'll swing their guns around.
We got to try it. We can't stay here. Stevens, can you crawl?
Yeah, I can make it.
Okay, now you lead off and I'll follow you. I'll crawl backwards and pull Whitey along behind me.
Whitey?
You heard me.
But we'll never make it with...
Quiet! All you have to do, Harry, is follow along behind and pick up the pieces. Take his weapon. It'll make him lighter.
Keep your hands off me, Harry.
Come on, Whitey. We haven't any time to fool around.
I'm not fooling. I'm not going with you guys.
Come on. You lost too much blood already.
I just did. Like you said, Brownie, it's only a matter of time. You can't get anywhere with me. You'll never even get past the clearing trying to drag me across. You're smart enough to know that, Brownie. It'll be tough enough, even with two good legs.
We're not leaving you here.
That's what I figured you'd say, Brown.
I'm still in charge here.
I figured you'd say that, too. Brownie, you see this grenade? It doesn't have any pin in it. The only thing that keeps the spring from kicking the clip off is my hand. Now get out of here, Brownie, before I let it go.
Oh, why?
You want me to let loose of this grenade? Now prop that VAR up in the dike in front of me. And scatter the clips where I can get at them. I'll wait until you guys get to the edge of the paddy before I open up.
Look, baby.
I'm still holding the grenade, Brownie. Time is running out. You're going to have to hurry. I feel like I want to fall asleep, and I don't know how much longer I can stay awake. Just wish me a very Merry Christmas and beat it.
Merry Christmas, Whitey. All right, you guys, what are you waiting for? Let's move out.
Yeah, that's right. This is Christmas.
O little town of Bethlehem, how still we sleep.
What's the matter? Don't you people like Christmas carols? Oh, machine gun fire always was better getaway music than Christmas carols.
Above thy dark and dreaming...
Whitey lay there. Until the others had crawled to the end of a low rice paddy wall. And then he threw his grenade. When it exploded, he opened up with a BAR, making enough noise to make the enemy think the patrol was launching an attack. Both machine gun nests zeroed in on him, but Whitey stayed well below the little mud wall of the rice paddy, humming his Christmas carol, loading the BAR with a fresh clip every time it went empty, and perhaps wondering briefly why he was going to die so far away from home. A little pond of frozen mud he didn't care about or even own. Still firing and singing, even after the rest of the squad had escaped into the underbrush, and until either the machine gunners found their mark or else he finally fell asleep.
Quite a guy.
No, I guess it was just a detail that had to be done, and he had to do it. Well, there's my stop right there where that little road turns off up ahead.
Your detachment's up that road?
That's right at the end of it.
Sure, I've seen that road before, but I didn't think there was anything up there.
Just let me out here.
Yeah, sure thing.
Thanks a lot.
No sweat.
Say, if you ever want to look me up, remember my outfit's all the way up at the end of this road. I'll be right up there.
Okay, I'll drop in sometime.
Right. So long, and thanks again.
I drove off figuring it'd be a very cold day in Korea before I ever looked him up. He's such a weird guy, he gave me the creeps. I got about 5 miles down the road when I discovered he'd left his bag sitting on the floor of the Deuce and a Half. Took a lot of arguing with myself, but I decided that the only decent thing I could do was to swing around and take it back to him. Besides, maybe I could stop in the orderly room and check him out. Find out what his story really was. I almost missed the road because it was so small and seldom used. I drove up it for about 10 minutes. I was beginning to wonder if I hadn't gotten the wrong road after all, as I passed no other vehicles or GIs or anything to indicate there was an infantry company around. Just when I was ready to turn back to the main road, I saw lights twinkling up ahead from what looked like a couple of Quonsets. It seemed impossible that an infantry outfit could be housed in 2 Quonsets, but I pulled a Deuce and a Half to a road outside the gate and cut off the motor. I picked up the AWOL bag, got out of the truck, trying to figure out which one was the orderly room. I walked across the hard-packed snow of the yard to the first Quonset. I still couldn't figure it out. Light and warmth seemed to pour from the windows along with the music I remembered from somewhere, but couldn't quite understand. I stepped up to the first window I came to and looked inside. There were kids all over the place, kids of all sizes and descriptions, kids just old enough to sit by themselves, kids just losing their first teeth, some just starting their teens. I stood in the snow spellbound, just watching them sing. Finally, I tore myself away and headed for the front door, eager to be inside. A plaque made out of the howitzer shell stopped me. In the faint light, I could just barely make out the words engraved on the polished brass. But finally, I read it all. It said, "This orphanage has been erected and maintained in the memory of Corporal Richard Whitey Dombrowski, who somewhere north of the village of Chungju-ri, Christmas night 1951, willingly gave his life that others might live." Suddenly, I didn't know where I belonged anymore. The AWOL bag dragged at the end of my arm like a 1,000-pound weight. I could figure what was in it, but I tore it open anyway. The bag full of candy, soap, and toothpaste and gum shined up at me, looking as rich and rare as frankincense and myrrh. I closed the bag, laid it up against the door, close, so they wouldn't miss it. And then I banged on the door as loud and long as I could, until I was sure that they heard me. And then I ran. I ran back down the road to my truck as fast and as hard as I could.
You've been listening to a Korean Christmas carol written for Suspense by George Bamber. In tonight's story were Bill Lipton as Larry Connolly and Lyle Sudrow as Richard. Also heard were Larry Robinson, Lawson Zerbe, Phil Meader, Alan Manson, and Guy Repp. Suspense on CBS Radio.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday, their story, A Korean Christmas Carol, from December 20th, 1959 on CBS. Wrapping up this hour of Christmas shows on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Happy holidays.